This is, of course, Food Wednesday here on the broadcast. And after months of speculation and salivation over which restaurants would make Michelin's first ever D.C. restaurant guide, we now know who sits at the top of the culinary food chain. Michelin's 1- and 2-star choices came with a few surprises. What? No, 3-star picks? But it also represented a full circle moment for chefs and diners alike. What was once known as Steakhouse D.C. is now an international food destination. But what does this milestone mean for the affordability and diversity of good food in our region, and how does it change the game for eating well in this town? Joining us from studios at the Washington Post is Tom Sietsema. He is food critic with the Washington Post and author of the Washington Post Dining Guide. Tom, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me today.
It's been quite a week for Washington's food scene. The Washington Post published your annual fall dining guide this weekend, just after the Michelin Guide crowned several of our city's restaurants with stars. As a restaurant reviewer, do Michelin's picks validate your own views over the years, or is this a Johnny-come-lately view, or is it a mixed bag?
Well, I know this might sound like sour grapes. I think it's great, first of all, to have – I don't really see Michelin as competition. I see it as another source of restaurant ideas or restaurant information, actually. And I think the more the merrier, certainly, in the dining scene. We have a lot of good food writers here in town. Michelin is new to the game. We just happened to come out on the very same day. That was certainly not planned by the two of us. I think it says something about Washington. You know, the old sentiment that Washington is a steakhouse town hasn't been true for over a decade now, you know, and it's just written and republished by I think lazy writers sometimes. You know, we've really progressed in so many different ways, I think. We've always been known for our cheap eats and some fine dining places. But now what we have are a real deep bench of neighborhood restaurants, which I find really exciting. And I think, you know, Michelin is picking up on some of this energy that we have in Washington right now. It's really accelerated in the last 2 years in particular, I think.
I know there were some shockers in these Michelin picks for you. What were the surprises?
Well, the surprise, I guess I wasn't too surprised that we didn't have a 3-star. You know, it's the first year that Michelin is coming out. You know, they might want to, be a little patient or hold back. I can't guess at their motives there. I was surprised that Rasika wasn't on the list. I think it's one of the best of our Indian restaurants in the country, actually. And where was the love for Johnny Monis? You know, he's the chef who has a fabulous modern Greek restaurant and also a little Thai-flavored place, Komi and Little Saro, respectively. I think they're standard bearers for those cuisines. And I was really surprised not to see that kind of representation in Michelin.
We're talking with Tom Sietsema. He is food critic with the Washington Post and author of the Washington Post Dining Guide. We're taking your calls at 800-433-8850. Do Michelin stars mean that Washington's food has, well, arrived? Does that matter more to locals or to tourists or to both? 800-433-8850. You can send email to kojo@wamu.org. Shoot us a tweet at Kojo Show or go to our website, kojoshow.org, and join the conversation there. Tom, you had a quote from Donald Trump in your fall dining guide where Trump gave his take on the abundance of great dining destinations in D.C. He said basically not, or quoting here, there aren't that many in Washington, believe me. Apparently he's been proven wrong, so I'm curious about your thoughts about how fine dining is changing both in the back of the house and in the front. Do edgy, innovative dishes and tattoos instead of tuxes now define haute cuisine?
Well, first of all, I just wanted to say that my entire dining guide was a rebuttal of Mr. Trump's sentiments about the restaurant scene. I don't think he's eating around that much in this city, you know, qualified to say something like that. But, I do think that, we have all this new energy right now. It was exciting for me to give my number one pick on my top 10 list to a pizza place. You know, I don't think that would have happened a couple of years ago. But what I liked about it was that it's, you know, accessible. The price point is good. Getting back to your question, though, about fine dining, I think Washington is leading the way in terms of fine dining. I've eaten, last year I had occasion to rank the 10 best food cities in the country. I spent a week in 10 or 12 different places. It was great fun. But it really put Washington in context for me, I think. And what I noticed is, you know, restaurants have done away with things in many cases with, you know, linens and $10,000 a month, you know, flower expenditures and that sort of thing. But what's changed now is fine dining is more fun. It's less stuffy. You know, the chefs may be your waiters. Even the bread course might be a surprise. At Pineapple and Pearls, for instance, you get two little lovely little brioche biscuits, and it comes in a little box. And you think, ah, that's cute. And then it opens into three different compartments with all sorts of accessories, you know, and you're encouraged to eat one of each and then eat them all together. And little things like that, you know, I think are really fun. What some people don't like is the reservation process or the expenditure. I kind of like the idea that some of these restaurants are asking us to pay in advance, because it really does take, you know, it's sort of not a fun part of the evening when you're signing this large bill at the end of the night. And at Pineapple and Pearls, for instance, what I love is that you pay this fee, $250. It's all inclusive, tax, tip, drinks. And I think that's wonderful. And by the way, I think you can spend that kind of money in a very mediocre steakhouse in town. So people who complain about the price, I look at it as a journey or a vacation from Workaday Washington, as something special. It's more than just food. It's a whole night's entertainment.
800-433-8850. It's Food Wednesday. Do you agree with Michelin's choices? Do you feel D.C. was snubbed for the highest three-star honor? Give us a call, 800-433-8850. Joining us in studio is Patrick O'Connell. He is the chef and owner of the Inn at Little Washington. Patrick O'Connell, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me today, Kojo, and it's a great pleasure to be with Tom and Fabio here.
And we'll be talking with Fabio very shortly. The Inn at Little Washington is now a two-star Michelin-rated restaurant. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
I'd love to hear how you got the news and how you celebrated with your staff.
Still celebrating. Might be celebrating for the next month.
Get him off the floor, Patrick. Come on.
We had a party last night, as a matter of fact, with our staff. It was a bit of a roller coaster because for many years I've felt strongly about Michelin's coming to D.C. And felt that it was time. After all, it's our nation's capital. And I have a lot of opportunity to be in France with the Relais and Chateau Association, as I'm the president of the North American group. And I've always been astonished by the number of Europeans, particularly French, who don't come to Washington or have never been. Yet they will go to New York, they'll go to Las Vegas, they'll go to San Francisco and Floridia, but not Washington, D.C. So it's a reputation we have to overcome, and Michelin's acknowledgement that we are now on the international food map will help that, I'm sure.
You are the only Virginia pick in what was supposed to be a D.C.-centric list, and you mentioned that you'd been encouraging Michelin for years to come to this area. Michelin announced that it would come, but only to the district, not the suburbs, effectively shutting out the Inn at Little Washington at the time. What did you think?
Well, I was, first of all, celebrating that they were finally coming to Washington. And then I read that and I thought, well, I've waited 38 years. I'll wait another year. So I was fully prepared to be patient. And then it was a nice surprise to end up being included after all.
Do you think that D.C.'s evolving dining scene ultimately helped to strengthen your case?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes.
You're a native Washingtonian who started your restaurant in a former garage in the 1970s. Can you talk a little bit about how you've seen this restaurant scene change and seen your competition increase over the years in this region?
Well, it's been an entire change that's covered America. There were almost no American-style restaurants and very few American chefs cooking when we opened in 1978. And in fact, this is why we ended up taking inspiration from the Michelin-starred restaurants of Europe, because there really wasn't a model here outside of a major urban center to look to help us create a vision of what we wanted to do. So at the end of the first year, after renting the garage and driving a Dodge Dart that we bought for $150, we took all our pennies and went to the great starred restaurants of France, one after the other. and studied them and approached it as a sort of a form of education and began measuring ourselves against what they were doing and what we were doing here. And, of course, it was another planet at that time, but it was instructive and extremely helpful. We kept doing that for 25 years, and every year the gap began to narrow. So for me, the announcement for Michelin was an acknowledgement that the gap has now been eliminated.
Also joining us in studio is Fabio Trabocchi. He is the chef and owner of several D.C. restaurants, including Fiola and Fiola Mare. Fabio, good to see you again.
Nice to see you. Thank you to have me here. And it's nice to be here with Patrick and Mrs. Sitzma.
Congratulations on the Michelin star for your restaurant, Fiola.
Thank you. Thank you.
Over the years, you've received so many international honors, so many accolades for your cooking. What does getting the Michelin star mean to you, and especially to your staff at Fiola?
The staff is extremely thrilled and pleased. Personally, I started in Italy, and my very first call into the kitchen when I first wear a chef jacket was one day to work for a Michelin star. And I started my way in Italy doing everything that I learned at the beginning, working for free for Michelin star chefs. Most often, I needed to be recommended from one chef to another, so they will all use me into free labor, so that I could get that good word to go into that nice kitchen where I could work for a Michelin star chef. The education of that is something that I carry with me over the years, and I was always dreaming of the day that Michelin will touch Washington, D.C. I think it's a terrific opportunity for the city. I think it's something that we have to support. I think it's something that will make even a stronger message for the type of dining scene that we see right now in Washington.
Well, your Georgetown restaurant, Fiola Mare, has been rated the top restaurant in D.C. by Washingtonian, among others, but it did not make the Michelin ratings this year. How does your star for Fiola affect your work at both of these top restaurants moving forward?
The work hasn't changed. The non-star for Fiola Mare is something that we took and we will work on for a year to come. And we're just going to focus mostly, just like Michelin say, to make sure that our customers are very happy when they come to our restaurants. And that's the most important part after all.
We're going to take a short break. As you know, this is the middle of our fall membership campaign, so we're going to do a little of that. But we'll be coming back to this Food Wednesday conversation right after, so you can call now, 800-433-8850. How much do ratings and reviews matter when you go out to eat? Do you agree with Michelin's choices? Do you feel D.C. was snubbed for the highest three-star honor? Give us a call, 800-433-8850, or send email to kojo@wamu.org, or send us a tweet at Kojo Show. I'm Kojo Namdi. Welcome back to our Food Wednesday conversation about D.C.'s Michelin restaurants and the changing food scene. We're talking with Fabio Trabocchi. He is chef and owner of several D.C. restaurants, including Fiola and Fiola Mare. Patrick O'Connell is chef and owner of the Inn at Little Washington. And Tom Sitzema is a food critic with the Washington Post and author of the Washington Post Dining Guide. Tom, we got this email from Betty who says, I think Michelin reviewers are persnickety. Tom is the creme de la creme. I take his recommendation any day. Tom, I'm curious about how powerful you think Michelin stars are in American dining. Some food commentators have said that dining is changing so much these days that Michelin's perfectionist expectations don't exactly fit in with how we eat today. What are your thoughts?
Well, I do think there's something to that. Look, I am enormously pleased that both the gentlemen in your studio today got honored by Michelin. I think it's a huge honor. I think they set a fabulous example for this city and for their peers across the country. I think that's great. I do think, though, that I didn't recognize the city that I know pretty well based on this very slim volume of restaurant reviews that came out. I will say that. And I think it read like outsiders were writing it, with not much time to get around. I mean, I just got that sense. I think the brand means a lot. I think I'll be very curious to see what it looks like next year, if it's a little more robust, if they've explored other neighborhoods, if they expand their sites to the suburbs where we have some of our best food, as the Inn at Little Washington reveals. I'm so glad that was included. I think it would have been a huge omission not to have the Inn at Little Washington in this year's guide. But I do think their standards are a little bit different. I think Europeans look at things a little differently than we do. And America these days is just, you know, Americans are very good at borrowing accents from around the world and creating their own cuisine from it. I mean, I think that's one of the great things about the food in this country right now. And I think the guide works best probably in places like France, maybe Spain, where the standards, you know, a bistro is a bistro is a bistro, or a good one or a bad one. It's just a little easier to gauge, I think, than over here where we have things like, you know, the avant-garde minibar and contemporary American restaurants such as Pineapple and Pearls. You know, it's just it's more of a mixed a great but mixed situation over here.
Patrick and Fabio, in September, the Washington City paper had a piece about how supportive D.C.'s top restaurants have been of one another, and obviously you and Fabio get along famously. But the article also asked whether D.C.'s culinary community would continue to sing Kumbaya after the Michelin ratings came out. I'd like to get your thoughts now that you have earned a Michelin star about that. Will you remain as friendly?
I think even more so. I think there's a greater respect that we're all in this together. And I was amazed at the outpouring of support that I received recently. We had an event for Michel Richard, one of our late great colleagues, and all the chefs were there. And everyone was collectively very excited for what has happened to the Washington scene and knowing that it's going to be increased next year.
The last time Fabio was on this broadcast, we were talking about Michel, and I was asking Fabio some questions about his own restaurants, and he essentially said, look, we're here to talk about my friend Michel. That's the kind
That's
of
absolutely
relationship
right.
you have here. Yes, how do you feel now about the community of restaurants here in the wake of the Michelin ratings?
It's always been unique to Washington since the first day I got here 15 years ago. We mentor each other, we help each other, we respect each other, and Michelin is it's part of what happened this year, but certainly the spirit will not go away. We can see what Chef Patrick just say when the ceremony of Michel Richard was happening this past Sunday. Chef from all over the country and in Washington, D.C. arrived to celebrate Chef Michel. That's a testament of the camaraderie that exists amongst chefs and restaurant operators in the city, no matter what kind of restaurants or how many stars.
800-433-8850. Here's Charles in Washington. Charles, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Just wondering, why didn't they put Jose Andreas of any of his restaurants on there? And as well as my favorite is Rasika's.
Tom Seitzman, Minibar was there, Tom.
Yeah, certainly. Minibar was one of the two-star Michelin inductees this year. And on a smaller list, the Bib Gourmand list, which reveals lesser priced restaurants, he had a couple restaurants on there. Jose Andres was actually the big winner this year in terms of number of restaurants. I mean, his Mexican themed Oil Mel was on, as was Haleo. So he was certainly not ignored. I do think, however, that Minibar by Jose Andres should have. Could have easily gotten 3 stars just based on other 3-star restaurants I've eaten in elsewhere in the world.
The influx of excellent restaurants in this region means, of course, that more help will be wanted to work both in front of the house and in the back of the house. Fabio, I know your restaurant group is looking for help. Will Michelin's entry into this market attract more qualified staff here, you think?
It certainly does, in a more international level. Just like when I started my career, it was very important to me to work for Michelin star establishments. And you follow a path or a roadmap of chefs you want to work for in order to build a foundation of knowledge of cooking. And there is still a lot of young chefs out there that are busy in their career at the starting of their career on that. So there's certainly a great opportunity when it comes to that.
Same question to you, Patrick.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We're looking forward to interviewing a lot of more interested people.
Tom, there's no doubt that culinary innovation has gone hand in hand with a changing Washington. But do you think we've lost something? Is eating out affordably getting harder to do in Washington?
Well, you know, I think the big change, I think a lot of millennials are driving this trend, food is sport. Unlike my generation, for instance, we wanted to buy cars and homes. This new generation is spending, is using Uber, perhaps renting an apartment, and spending a lot of money on food and drink. I see it every single night when I, Monday through Sunday, I see it, people 20-something, 30-somethings spending money on in restaurants at all price ranges, from fast food, from good local fast food places all the way up to the top tier places. I think it's something that people value. They view food as sport. And compared to my generation, I mean, they're so much more knowledgeable. I had to laugh earlier this year when Patrick O'Connell told me that, it's not enough to have really good food and service these days. People want to be astonished. And certainly Fabio and Patrick do that in their restaurants on a continual basis. It's just a very changed scene, and it's driven by a lot of younger appetites.
Patrick, what about the availability of fresh, hard-to-find ingredients? As Tom pointed out, these younger people know a lot more about food than our generation seem to. Is it easier now to find what you need for the caliber of cooking that you're doing?
It is. You're being flooded every day by new opportunities for rare ingredients. In our case, we just keep growing more and finding more suppliers right in our area. So it's extremely rewarding. We have a live-in farmer now who custom grows everything for our menu.
This month at WAMU, we're lifting our voices to shine a light on Black changemakers throughout American history. Some you know and some you don't, but they all change the world. Hear are the stories of these incredible scientists, activists, artists, and more throughout February on WAMU 88.5 and streaming at WAMU.org.
...that we want. And every person in the area and the surrounding areas is seeming to be growing something that we can incorporate. So that's a unique niche for us.
800-433-8850. Where do you go for an excellent, affordable meal? 800-433-8850. And where do you go when you really want to treat yourself? Will Michelin's list influence you the next time you go out? You can also send email to kojo@wamu.org. Fabio, you have at least two new restaurants in the works in this town, including Sfoglina, which is opening a block away from here very soon. Even as you enjoy your status as a Michelin-starred chef, how are you keeping affordability in mind for those diners who can't necessarily pay Michelin prices?
It is certainly a thought behind this Follina concept, to embrace the neighborliness and to make sure that we bring in the use of the kitchen table of everyone home into a restaurant, and the entire neighborhood will be able to use Follina with that purpose in mind. And it's... Michelin doesn't necessarily, needs to be always labeled as very expensive restaurant. I know that that's, however, the assumption that there are Michelin star restaurants, that there are one star restaurants, that there are vote on food that is actually affordable. It's the quality of what you put on a plate and the work that is done behind it.
On now to Alex in Arlington, Virginia. Alex, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi there, Kojo. You're a national treasure, and thank you for having your program. It's my view that it seems that I'm a big fan of Michelin restaurants. I go to them in Europe all the time. They could be one star, they could be below stars, but as long as they're Michelin rated, they seem to be excellent. I've seen or tasted restaurants here that are allegedly starred, and they're not up to snuff. And I'm wondering if Michelin, in order to create a publication that's thick enough, is basically rating them on a curve.
Tom Sitzner?
Well, I'd hate to speak for Michelin, but I think we just have such a deep bench of talent right now that it's I expect a more robust scene next year, a thicker Michelin guide next year. I don't think we have anything to apologize for right now. And as I said earlier, I think one of our gaps previously has been a range of mid-tier restaurants, good neighborhood restaurants, and that has been more than fulfilled in the last 2 years all over D.C. I see evidence of that all the time. So I would argue, I think we have some really innovative food here. I mean, no other city has a Jose Andres. There's not a more magical inn in the country than the Inn at Little Washington, in my estimation. I think we have the best Indian food in Rasika, you know, and I say that having been to India and everything. So I think we have nothing to apologize for. And I remember something that Jose Andres said to me last year. He said, "Tom, we are not one thing. We are many things." And that is one of our great strengths in the nation's capital.
Patrick, with the honor of the Inn at Little Washington, do you see Michelin expanding outside the D.C. region? There are such compelling options in both Maryland and Virginia for stars.
Absolutely, and I think they fully intend to do that next year.
Okay. Well, on now to Russell in Gaithersburg, Maryland. Russell, your turn.
Hi, Tom. I'm a big fan of your guide, and I follow you on Twitter. I just wanted to get your opinion.
Thank you.
On one of the big snubs of the list in Little Cerro. But I think if you compare it to a similar Thai restaurant on the New York guide, like Pok Pok, I think it's probably fair that they were left off the list this year. And maybe it will be interesting to see if they can kind of rise up and get on it next year.
Tom?
Sure, yeah, fingers crossed. You know, I totally understand that. I do think I was in Chiang Mai last year, and I thought, wow, where have I had this food before? And I thought, oh, Little Cerro, that's where I've had this food before. You know, I think in some cases, Little Cerro is better than Pok Pok, and I've eaten at the original in Portland, Oregon. I think the original is probably better than the one in New York. But yeah, I think Little Cerro certainly deserved a spot.
Well,
somewhere.
Another surprise was that Bad Saint, a Filipino restaurant in Shaw, did not get a star, but it got a nod on Michelin's Bib Gourmand list, which honors more affordable restaurants. What does affordable mean to Michelin, Tom?
Well, I wondered that too. You know, it's like $40 a couple courses without tax and tip. But actually, when you do the math, I talked to a couple of restaurants, and they said it wasn't a couple of restaurants that were included in the Bib Gourmand list. And they told me that actually it's a little bit more expensive if you eat at some place like, say, the Red Hen in Bloomingdale. They were glad to be on the list, but they also acknowledged that the guide wasn't entirely accurate, and there was about $10 more that you'd have to spend. I was glad to see all these restaurants on this list anyway. Or most of them.
Fabio, consistency is a core value for Michelin inspectors. They want to see dishes prepared the same way each time they visit a restaurant. But for a chef who wants, on the one hand, to keep his or her stars, can maintaining that level of consistency stifle innovation?
It's the challenge of every day, keeping the consistency of what we know and securing that innovation will always also provide consistency of the future. And it doesn't involve necessarily only the vision in the hands of one individual, but it is the effort and the work of an entire team.
Fabio Trabocchi is chef and owner of several D.C. restaurants, including Fiola and Fiola Mare. Fabio, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Patrick O'Connell is chef and owner of the Inn at Little Washington. Patrick, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Kojo.
Congratulations to both of you again. Tom Sietsema is a food critic at the Washington Post. He's the author of the Washington Post Dining Guide. You can find links to Tom's Fall Dining Guide and his survey of the country's best foods at our website. You can find a link at kojoshow.org. Tom, thank you for joining us.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
And that's it for the show today. But tonight is the night. No, I'm not talking about the debate. I'm talking about the latest in our WAMU In Your Bookstore series. Producer Taylor Burney will be at Politics and Prose on Connecticut Avenue, talking with author Britt Bennett about her much-anticipated debut novel, The Mother, starting at 7 p.m. They'll be done by 9, and afterwards you can actually stay at Politics and Prose for a debate watch party, if you're so inclined. Either way, get details at WAMU.org/events, and be sure to meet us back here tomorrow at noon. We'll look at whether metro service cuts unfairly affect neighborhoods of color, plus how growing up in Silver Spring inspired local author Rion Amilcar Scott and his short story collection, Insurrections. That's all coming up tomorrow at noon. Until then, thank you all for listening. I'm Kojo Nandi.
WAMU 88.5 is your listener-supported NPR news station in the greater Washington, D.C. region. You can support the Kodjo Namdi Show and all the regional coverage you value by becoming a member today. Click the donate button at WAMU.org, and thanks.